You can't laugh as I play the intro music. That's rude. So rude. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, and of course, desperately missing good night. This is the Sullivan Talk Show, and for the second week running, Sarah is hearing it all live, happening right here in the magic that is Withers Studios. My name is Josh Withers. I am but half of this podcast, and the other person is sitting across from me, and her name is Sarah Ed.
Hello, everybody. I can't help but laugh. We did explain this in the last episode, but usually when we're recording this, I'm in my house in Melbourne, and Josh is here in his cave, and I don't hear any of the sound effects or the music or anything else when we record that normally, so this is the second time that I'm hearing the theme music while we're recording, and it just amuses me.
See, I get great amusement. I don't even put it in the end podcast, but whenever you make something that's like a joke that's not that funny, I just do that for myself. So like, yeah, good one, Withers. Good one. You gotta good. That's a lot of cricket. That's a large quantity of cricket. That's probably too much.
So many cricket.
Sarah, today is a bit of a special episode because an article came out in the ABC in the much-famed Journalism Hall of Excellence that is the far north of Queensland ABC because they're responding to a survey from COCA, the Coalition of not Liberal and National Governments, but instead the Coalition of Civil Celebrants. They put a survey out.
Stop.
Well, what did I say?
The Coalition of Celebrant Associations, not the Coalition of Civil Celebrants.
CNA are different letters, aren't they?
Different letters. COCA.
To open the theme of this episode, I just thought we'd say we're talking about this. Do you know that in the film clip for this, they've got a little coin, a German coin, I think it was an Austrian movie, with adults written on it. ABBA were a band of much nuanced conversation.
Who are apparently about to release some new music.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
Which is frightening.
But we're talking about money, Sarah.
Yes.
We addressed a little while ago in one of the episodes about going full-time, which I see that there's two stages of any business. And look, you could probably get more nuanced and say there's 50 stages and you might be completely correct. But I feel that the two big stages are getting up to 100 kilometres an hour and then staying at 100 kilometres an hour. And we'll talk more about that soon. But over to you. Give us the download on this news article / survey.
Sure. So I want to take a step back before I do that first. And the majority of people who listen to this podcast are registered celebrants and will know, hopefully, what I'm about to say. But I know that we have some celebrancy students and we also have some random other wedding professionals listening. So I just wanted to go back and explain a little bit about professional associations and COCA and all that sort of thing. So there are a whole bunch of professional associations for registered celebrants in Australia. It is not a requirement of being a celebrant that you belong to a professional association, but it is recommended. However, and there's like, I don't know, 17 or 18 of them. Some of them are national, like the Australian Federation of Civil Celebrants. Some of them are state-based. So there's the Association of Civil Marriage Celebrants of Victoria, the Association of Civil Marriage Celebrants of South Australia, blah, blah, blah.
No, please go on to great detail about all the different names and how they've managed to work the word civil and celebrant association, the different, is it 17, 18 different combinations?
Yep. Awful.
And much love to our celebrant association brethren. We love you guys. Thank you for existing.
Yeah, sort of. But what we do know, so even though it's not a requirement of being a celebrant that you belong to an association, I know that there are some professions that in order to maintain your registration as a whatever, you have to belong to the association. That's not a thing when you're a celebrant. And in fact, I think the numbers last time I heard was that it's around, well, it's definitely less than half of Commonwealth registered marriage celebrants in Australia belong to a professional association. And in fact, I think it's more like just over a third, which isn't very many at all.
Because AFCC claims to be the biggest.
Yes, and they've got almost 2,000 members.
I can tell you through an unfortunate slip that AMC has got 775 members.
Yep, good. But we also, like, you know, you can't just add up the number of members that each association has and goes, that's how many celebrants, because some people belong to more than one association.
Exactly. Like, I like to be a member of them just to see what's going on.
What's happening.
Just see what everyone's doing because they do weird things.
Yes, yes, they do. So then the cult, well, okay.
The cult, and then she pauses.
No, I didn't say that. I was about starting to say coalition and then paused. So apparently several years ago, whoever the Attorney General was at the time, I don't know when it was, maybe 15 years ago or something, said, I'm sick of hearing from individual celebrants when you people have a problem. I want there to be one peak body that comes to the government and represents all of the celebrants and basically comes to talk to us when there's an issue. And I can see that Josh has his finger on the unmute button.
So it's because I edit this podcast and it's easier to edit if I'm not talking that I mute my thing. No. So I'm not. That's my channel that I'm muting.
Yeah, no. But I was thinking that you were wanting to unmute yourself so that you could say something.
Oh, well, I just don't want to miss the opportunity to make a quick remark if I need to.
Okay, good news. So, yeah, he said, I just want there to be one single point of contact, basically. And so that's when the Coalition of Celebrant Associations was formed. So basically all of the celebrant associations decided that they would sign up to this coalition that's kind of like the United Nations, I guess.
Kind of like the United Nations?
That's what some people have told me in the past.
Wow.
And each association that signs up to be part of COCA gets essentially two seats at the table, or one, I think it's two, one or two positions basically that two of their committee members or whatever can be part of COCA and blah, blah, blah. And then twice a year, the COCA members meet with staff from the Attorney General's Department, Marriage, Law and Celebrant section. And there's a agreement in place about how often they meet and how long for and yada, yada. And it's at that meeting that celebrants are supposed to put forward through their associations and therefore through COCA any issues that they're having around the law or the regulation of the program or blah, blah, blah. But the problem is that, as I said, less than half of registered celebrants belong to an association, and therefore, to me, COCA is not really very representative of the general celebrant population and our needs and requirements. Anyway, having said that, it's what we have at the moment. It's the best that we have. There's one association that does not belong to COCA. That's the Australian Federation of Civil Celebrants, the AFCC. And that's because, and this is where the UN analogy comes in, they basically said, we're the biggest association, we have the most members, therefore we should get more seats at the table.
Now, can I just make sure that everyone's hearing you correctly? Are you saying that Anthony Burke is the Trump of the Australian celebrant world?
No.
That he's the Donald Trump of the celebrant. I think that's what you said. It's all recorded here.
Well, this all happened well before Anthony Burke's time. So, no. Stop causing trouble, Joshua Withers.
Happy birthday. Mr. President.
Moving on. They said we should get more seats at the table because there's more of us. And COCA went, no, that's not how we work. We're like the UN. Every country gets one seat, no matter how big or small the country is. So the AFCC is not part of COCA, but they are still allowed to send representatives to the meeting with the Attorney General's Department twice a year.
Is that like the G20 or so of celebrants?
Yeah. Anyway, so the people who are part of COCA, in the most part, they do good work to advocate on our behalf. They're just not very representative of the greater celebrant population, and I think that's problematic. But anyway, once a year, COCA puts out a survey, and the idea of the survey is that they hope that lots of celebrants will respond, and it's kind of a state of the union. State of the market type of thing. So how old are you? What gender are you? How many ceremonies do you do a year? Do you only do weddings? Do you do other ceremonies? How much money do you make from your celibacy? Is it your full-time income, part-time, hobby? Those sorts of demographic questions, I suppose. And they put it out and they email it to every celebrant, every registered marriage celebrant, and they say, please respond to our survey. Well, the survey closed this year on the 31st of March, and the raw data is currently up on the COCA website. So if you go to the COCA website homepage, which is Coalition of Celebrant Associations.org.au, it's on the front page. And you will see there that 1,392 celebrants commenced the survey this year. There are currently 8,666 Commonwealth Registered Marriage Celebrants in Australia. So 1,392 is less than 16%.
Now, I wanted to actually, because I agree with the sentiment that you're putting forward, but I actually wanted to push back on that. I didn't do it when we talked about it off air because I thought it'd be good for the podcast.
You didn't want to spoil it. Yep.
So TV ratings, radio ratings, in fact, almost all, I would say that every single survey, whenever someone says survey says or study shows, works on a thing called a sample size. So that we sample a size, a part of the audience, and to get their thoughts, and we correlate that data. And I was, because I've worked on radio and TV before, and I can't remember the math for sample size, but it's pretty bloody small. So when someone says this was the number one show, often like 1 in 100 or 2 in 100 people gave that data. And but I was looking for some actual maths on this. And so SurveyMonkey, who I actually think did the COCA survey, and they're a, I don't know if industry standard is the word, but they're
ubiquitous.
Yeah, ubiquitous. They've got a sample size calculator to give you an idea of
What kind of response rate you need.
Yeah, what kind of response rate you need. And so they've got a little calculator that says, what's the population size, what's the confidence level, and what's the margin of error. So I've said population size, celebrants are 8,800 odd.
8,666.
Sorry,
8,666. You asked for the number and I gave it to you.
I know, but I'm not a good listener. And so the confidence level is the probability that your sample accurately reflects the attitudes of your population. The industry standard, generally speaking, is 95%. The lowest confidence level they'll let you have is 80%. I've chosen that just to go super conservative, that it's an 80% chance that the respondent is indicative of the rest of the audience. And then the margin of error is the range measured as a percentage that your population's responses may deviate from your samples. And so the most amount of error that allows 1%. So this is like the most conservative, like we actually want to get an accurate response. They're saying we would need 2,700 responses. But if you went back to industry standards, which is 5% margin of error and 95% confidence level, they'd want a sample size of 368.
Okay. So there's two things in that. I do have a psychology degree. I do know a few things about research.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to put that out there.
No.
I thought other people might think the same thing.
Yeah, and I totally get that. My concern is that we know that you get better results when you take a sample that is representative of the population.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so when you are doing a large-scale survey, you go, okay, well, we know that in Victoria, because of the census, we know that 60% of Victorians are aged between whatever and whatever, and 7% are aged between that. So therefore, 60% of our people that we're going to survey need to be between that age, the first age group, and 7% need to be between the second age group, and things like that, yeah? They've just sent this to all celebrants. So they don't – and the point is that they don't know what the celebrant population looks like. So they can't do a representative sample.
Okay, that's fair.
But I don't believe that the people who respond to this, looking at these raw results, I don't think the people who respond to this are representative of the wider population.
I wonder if it's because I'm trying to remember. I think this went to my spam folder.
Probably.
And I'm a pretty big spam checker. I just check my spam folder every day.
Yeah.
Because on average, one message every two days that I should see ends up in spam. And so I wonder if this is actually indicative of people who have spam filters, aka they use Gmail or Fastmail, or I think that has spam filtering, and they check or people that don't have spam filtering, so they're emailing josh@bigpond.com. You know, because there's you can pull data apart forever. Like it's literally a science.
Yeah, for sure.
Data science is an actual science.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. If you want to know other sciences, just Google science on Google.
So, but if we do look at the raw data, you know, we've purely got how many people answered each question. 80% of respondents were female. I don't think 80% of celebrants are female. I think that's a bit too high.
80%?
80%.
I don't reckon it's far off.
Like really?
I'm just going by my nose. I don't know.
And then less than, what did I say that was? 15% were age under 50 of respondents. Again, I don't think only 15% of celebrants are aged under 50. Particularly now, the last 5 years have seen a big influx of younger celebrants coming through. And I don't think that 15% under 50 is representative.
Yeah, but then again, I think that it's, I know that there's a cognitive bias for this that I just can't remember the word for, so instead I'll tell it in a colloquial fashion. You know, like when you buy a Mazda, all of a sudden all you see is Mazdas.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
What's that cognitive bias called? Come on, you're the psychologist.
But we do know, so for example, I've seen some statistics from the training colleges and they are showing statistics that they're, people coming through the Cert 4 and celebrancy are younger and younger.
Yeah.
So therefore it's not just a cognitive bias. It is supported by that training data at the very least.
It is. But there was also, 12,000 odd celebrants a couple of years ago. It's now down to
8,000 odd. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like it got to 12 anyway.
And then the next bit that's interesting is that the question is, and this is really what the article in the ABC Far North was based off, was in the last calendar year, how many wedding ceremonies did you perform? And almost 50%, 48.31% said less than 10.
Yeah, see, that's...
less than 10.
It's nutso.
And the only... there was what? 8% said they did more than 50 of the respondents. So remember, that's not necessarily 8% of celebrants, of respondents. And in terms of what kind of work it was, 22% said full time, but the most was 43% said it was retirement income / hobby.
Because you know what, and if you're planning a kick ass wedding, the thing you definitely want is someone's hobby, which is kind of where today we wanted to get to. I actually sat down this morning. I thought, I'm going to prepare for this a little bit. And I had a real mixed brain about it. And I thought, I should talk to Sarah about it. And I thought, we should record a podcast about it. And so what's...
Actually, hang on. I want to say something else. There's another question here that is, are you currently a financial member of a celebrant association? 71% said yes.
Okay, so...
so we know that's not representative.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so because we know the number is more like 3,000 in total. So, yeah, there we go. Anyway, all right, so then an article came out on ABC Far North on Sunday at 6:15, and it was basically about the fact that it's pretty hard to make a full-time income out of being a celebrant, and that COCA is once again calling for a moratorium on celebrant registrations because, you know, we should be able to make more money. Because it says less than 2% of celebrants who responded earn more than $50,000 a year from weddings. And more like 3/4 made less than $9,500 per year. So, yeah, COCA is basically saying that
we're being
everybody wants more work.
We're being swamped by young celebrants.
We should have a moratorium so it could be reviewed and yada yada. I can pretty much guarantee there's never going to be another moratorium on...
What do you say then?
Because we know, well, particularly the current government, the current Liberal government, and even the last Labor government, are all about cutting red tape, and they're all about reducing government fingers in people's living.
Because that's where I am. Like, I'm not definitely not for a moratorium.
Yeah.
But you mentioned that and I didn't ask why. So I wanted to ask why. Also, I feel that...
But also it's anti-competitive.
It's anti-competitive. And Australian governments today, and I'm in favour of this, they want to let the market decide.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's some things where they shouldn't let the market decide. And their government services. Like, I'm glad the market doesn't decide who's getting welfare or not. Sorry, Jill, it's just not profitable that we give you money. So I'm glad that some services are not
market driven.
But celebrancy most definitely is. Particularly because the entry to market is not that high. And
it's work intensive. There's a lot of work, but it's not hard. Look,
if you're doing a Cert 4 today, it's not a walk in the park. I would argue that the course that I did when I became a celebrant, quite walk in the parkish.
Oh, my course was definitely walk in the park. I finished in 2 weeks.
Mine was maybe 10 Thursday nights.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nothing. I just had to sit in the course. I've gone to great lengths since then to become better than that course ever could have hoped me for it to be. But I think the entry level to becoming a celebrant is low, could be higher. I feel that the next phrase I say will cause irk and fear and celebrants worldwide, but that the $240 annual fee could be higher.
Yep, agreed.
Because that fee, when that invoice rocks up in mid-July... That fee should make you say, "Do I want to be a celebrant? Am I like is this a profit generating thing in my life?" Because I've got this funny thing I do with credit cards because I'm a credit cards points guy. I love to have the points and the credit cards, and usually when I go overseas, sometimes I'm lucky enough just to lose the card through regular attribution, or sometimes I'll cut it up and I'll say I lost it because once every year or two. I just want to lose my credit cards, get new credit card numbers. And so when the emails start piling, you're like, oh, hey, Josh, your credit card bounced and we need to get your new credit card for this membership. I can be like, oh, actually, I'm not going to renew you. And it's a weird, lazy thing. But, you know, sometimes you'll see, you'll get your credit card statement and that thing that's like, it's $1 a month or it's $3 a month and you're not going to go change it because it's $3, it doesn't matter. But then you lose your credit card and so I'm then forced to make a decision. I'm like, actually, that $3 a month service, I'm going to discontinue that. And I feel like that celebrant registration fee should fund the department that lords over us and make sure that they're resource enough to support us and to lead us and to help us. But secondly, it should also just serve as a number. And I'm not actually saying it has to be high. I don't even know what that number is. But 240 is a number where you're like, do it again for another year. And maybe there's a number that would make people think twice.
And that number did make people think twice. We know that approximately 2,000 celebrants resigned in the 2 years after the registration fee came in. So it did make some people think twice, but probably not enough. In terms of the entry level being low, the last time the Certificate 4 in Celebrancy was reviewed, the recommendation from the review team was that it become a diploma.
Wow.
In celebrancy, but the Attorney General's Department, this is my understanding, I could be wrong, but my understanding is the Attorney General's Department went, no, we think a Cert 4 is enough. We don't think prospective celebrants need a diploma, so we're only going to say it's a Cert 4.
It's funny because I've done a little bit of study into the training sphere, and I thought it was interesting that certificate, like if you say certificate 4, because that is supposed to be a standard, that it's a, what's the other system apart from certificate 4 diploma? Like what's the other numbered system? Is it like 1, 2, 3,
the 4, AQF, 5, 6? Yeah, 1 to 10.
Yeah, 1 to 10. That obviously a level 4.
Is certificate 4.
Is a certificate 4. And so across the board, whether you're a boilermaker or a celebrant or a, I'm assuming there's a level 4 legal. What is that?
Yeah.
Like a legal secretary, maybe something? Yeah. That level 4, like it denotes a certain level of, and you could probably quote back to me, I know there's wording around what level 4 is, but I looked across different courses. I thought, I don't think all the level 4s are the same. Like there's a level 4 in maybe, you know, bookkeeping, which is not at the same level of intelligence and kind of skill that maybe something else is. I don't know, do you think the Cert 4 in celebrancy should actually be a diploma, a level 5?
No, I think that for the requirements of what we do, I think that a Cert 4 is sufficient. However, I don't think the current course was written as a diploma. So the current course for which you get a Cert 4 was written as a diploma. Oh. So it is actually harder than it should be at Cert 4 level. A Cert 4 is supposed to provide practical training for that will lead to a job, that will lead to work. And the current Cert 4 in celebrancy has a lot of very esoteric, theoretical rubbish in it, quite frankly, which is very hard to teach and much harder to assess. But we manage somehow.
You get through it. You figure it out.
We get through it, yes.
So I suppose we wanted to narrow in today on that. Instead of going from 0 to 100, staying at 100, just running that sustainable business. Because they mentioned the ABC article, they interview a bloke by the name of Wayne Rees, and he talks about all the great ceremonies he's done, which is awesome. And I'm just trying to get to the part where... So Wayne himself doesn't actually... They just interviewed Wayne for fun, which is nice.
Yeah.
But they're saying that celebrants are doing it for love, for the love of it. And unless you're getting paid enough. Ms. Collins from... is she from Cocoa?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's saying that most celebrants are in it for love. They should be given more consideration. And she says, there's no wedding without us, so we do have a very important role. And I'm 100% behind her. But I think I've said this to you, and I say it to many people who are trying to find that gusto to kind of step into that next stage of business and life, is that no one, COCA, no association, not the AGD, no one is going to knock on your door one day and say, oh, hey, Sarah, you're good enough now. I now permit you to charge enough money to support yourself. That phone call is never going to come. The knock on the door is never going to come. Particularly if you have parents like most of us do, your parents probably won't give you the permission. Like they won't say, "Hey, you know, go quit your job." Hopefully you're blessed to have a spouse that would be supportive and say, "Yeah, do it." But that's probably as close as you'll get. And so, the only other people left are friends and people like Sarah and I. And so, I'm just going to stay at the start of the podcast. You have permission to run a business that is sustainable. Which means that the running of that business is not a burden to you, but it's a blessing to you. And it should be nothing but, because it's a business. You're not running a charity. Unless, of course, you are running a celebrant charity, then please press stop on this podcast and delete it. And because this isn't for you. If you're running a charity, then God bless you and go forth and you're in. But I believe that you are worthy of earning a wage that doesn't make you feel like crap about turning it to work. And here's the why this is important, is because couples are getting married, they're having an awesome wedding, and they've asked you to be their celebrant. And if you turn up with any other attitude apart from, yeah, this is great, I'm so happy about this whole situation, then you're ripping the couple off. They're not ripping you off. You're doing them a disservice by not charging them enough, which is a bit of a mind screw. But by you not charging enough for you to do the job you're doing, you're not ripping yourself off and they're not ripping you off. You are ripping the couple off. Because when you turn up on the day and you're not resourced and you're not, like maybe you're tired because you've had to work another job this week. Or maybe your life is such that you haven't had a break or a holiday or just a day off because you don't charge enough. I can't afford to have a holiday. I can't afford to have a day off. But that... Once again, no one's going to give you permission to have a day off. This is your fault. You've fucked this up. And it's okay. I want to say that abruptly like that so you hear it. And then you have an opportunity to step up and say, I'm going to change something. Because there's no boss now. You're the boss. There's no employer that's going to say, hey, you've got to take 4 weeks off this year. It's December and you haven't had time off all year. So you need to step up and say, this is a number that allows me to run the kind of business my couples deserve to experience. And I think that's more important than most other things that we talk about in the celebrant industry. Because I hope that if you're bold enough to actually step up and become a celebrant, then you've obviously figured out the fact that you've got some kind of public speaking ability, and you obviously care that people are getting married. Hopefully you do. If you don't, once again, call the AGN, retire. Like if you're sitting here saying, I don't give a shit, then please retire today. Please just call them really quickly. And so if you're a person who cares about people getting married, if you've got somewhat of a public speaking ability, and if you have some words to say about people getting married that you think would be encouraging, then it's your responsibility to build a structure for that. It's a little bit like if I'm not very good at looking after things, clothing, precious things. So I've had to learn that if I've got something precious that I want to last more than today, I need to build a structure for that. Like if I've got a nice hat, I should put that in a box or a drawer so that hat is not destroyed. And this goes through your car, through your house, whatever. You have to build a structure for something to survive in. Even we've given birth to Luna 6 months ago, and it's a bit of my responsibility to build a structure for her to live and breathe in, and that's our job. So it's your job to create a structure for your business to operate in. It's your job to create a financial structure, a pricing and packaging and charging structure that allows it to operate. It's your job to create a process that allows couples to interact with you, inquire, book you, pay you, do the legals, blah, blah, all that kind of thing. That's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to create a structure for you to actually be the celebrant on the day. That might involve owning a car or, you know, having an Uber account. But it's your job. And I kind of wanted to put some fire into some people today, because we get in the Facebook groups and we have a bitch and a whine. Everyone's undercutting me. I can't make enough money. I'm going to talk to the ABC Far North about how none of us can make money. And I was trying to find, there was a podcast that Daily Messenger was on maybe a year or so ago about, he was on the Radio National Spirit of Things, Soul of Things, something like that. And he even made the comment. He just made this passing comment, there's no money in celebrancy. And I'm like, wow, Daily Messenger, you fucking guy. Don't get on the ABC radio and say there's no money in celebrancy. Honestly, that's rude. I hope Dally hears that. I hope you know that it's a rude thing to say, Dally. Because when you do something valuable for someone, you deserve to receive value back. Now, it might be that today we had some Oreos at home and we all ate Oreos and it was nice and everyone said thank you. That's a value exchange. I brought Oreos, everyone else ate the Oreos and we said thank you and had a good chat. But it might be that you drop someone at the airport and they give you a hug. Or it might be that you don't know the person you dropped them at the airport, so then at the end they pay you through Uber. But there's a value exchange. And when you provide value to couples that are getting married, there has to be an exchange of value. And you are in charge of that transaction because you're the business proprietor. You get to choose how much that costs. And this isn't going to be the episode where we talk about how much you should charge. I will happily talk about what I charge and how I structure that business. And Sarah, you're welcome to go wherever you like. I think
we've done the price talk.
I know.
Like six times.
We have. I charge $1,700. Please.
I charge $960.
Charge at least one of those figures, somewhere in the middle.
I gave a very good formula in one episode. It's back there somewhere.
Yeah. Sarah, I feel like I've just been kind of going on a bit of a diatribe.
I love diatribes. It's great. It's excellent.
Diatribe.
I promise.
I love how you just walk in and shit all over me. I've been to university. I got a good degrees. Thanks, Sarah.
I just read a lot of books, really.
I read books.
I read a lot. Books because I'm a nerd, but in a different way to Josh's nerdom. He's such a nerd, guys. He showed me his fancy Bose PA system today, just on a bit of a tangent, and all his fancy microphones and cords and it's cool. Sounds very nice. Anyway, I think that what I really look at this article and I go, for starters, I don't think that the survey that they are basing their there's too many celebrants and we don't make enough money is representative of the general celebrant population. So I think it's difficult for them to make wide pronouncements about there are no celebrants who are making any money from this, and, you know, it's a disaster and bloody blah, because the survey is not representative. But I do also recognise that for and look, we did talk in the going full-time episode about how different people, full-time means different things to different people. So when they asked in the COCA survey how many people think they're full-time, 25% answered that they were full-time, but 25% also said that they make less than $9,500 a year. So they probably, yeah, obviously a different 25%. But anyway, so full-time means something different. To me, you know, being a full-time celebrant means that I don't have any other forms of income. This is what pays for my entire life.
And I like to clarify that my celebrancy is my entire income, and my expenses are regular, like home, utilities, yep, car, food. And you know what? If you're lucky enough to live with parents or whatever, that's awesome. But I don't want to take away from any individual experiences, but just a celebrancy pays for all our life.
Yeah.
Not a trust fund or something else.
Yeah, totally. But I also recognise, and for my personal experience, that it's very difficult to cover all the expenses of your life from marriage celebrancy alone. Josh is very lucky in that respect, and there are some marriage celebrants I know who've built a marriage business to the point where it does cover, it does pay for their life.
I would argue that it's possible. You've got to work at it.
That's right. You've got to work. So I made a decision early on that I wanted to diversify. I wanted to do weddings, funerals, and training. And this year, I've decided to put more of my energy into training. And I am seeing that less wedding inquiries are coming through the door, and I will do less weddings this year and make less money from weddings. But I've made that decision because I've chosen to concentrate on a different part of my business, and that's okay. That's okay. You know, if I did want to be making all of my full-time money from weddings, then I would be throwing all of my marketing budget and all of my marketing thoughts and resources and everything into getting more weddings. But I'm throwing some of that into getting more training.
Can I reverse engineer that as well?
Of course.
Just why you said that. I believe that anyone who's gone full-time with their celebrancy, or even the baby steps of 1 day a week, 2 day a week, which is very, like we've talked about this before, this is the thing. But anyone that starts devoting more time, like actually saying, I'm not going to go to work on Friday, I'm going to work 4 days a week, and I'm going to put Friday into celebrancy, and or maybe open up to the whole week. Anyone that I've encouraged to do that will immediately tell you that when you have more time to invest in your business, guess what happens? You reap the rewards.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for sure. For sure.
Which I just wanted to reverse engineer that from how you've obviously diversified, and so you've put less energy into celebrancy, and thus you've reaped those rewards as well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, for sure. In terms of the point of the article, which is to say that COCA thinks there should be a moratorium on celebrant registrations, so they should put another cap on celebrant numbers like there used to be. I don't think there will ever be another cap on celebrant numbers.
That's
It is a big thing. I don't think there will ever be a moratorium on celebrant registrations. And I can't personally, and please, if you can think of one, let us know. I can't think of any other profession where the government says this is how many of this profession we are going to register. I don't know if that's a thing in any other profession at all. You know, I know that there are some professions. So my cousin's husband is a surveyor, a land surveyor, and they're essentially like their kind of professional association essentially puts caps on things.
Really?
Well, it's sort of like, he's kind of like, yeah, kind of someone has to die before I can become a registered surveyor. Wow. I don't think it's that exact. I think it's a bit sort of,
he's out looking for people to kill.
I just think it's quite hard to become a registered surveyor. Like you have to, do a practice survey on a piece of land that like doesn't really exist in many places, so it's quite hard, and they just have made it hard because they don't want there to be too many and blah, blah, blah. I can't think of anything of too many other professions, though, where the government has actually said this is how many of these there should be.
Well, the closest thing I can think of, which is not so much a limit, but it's just we're going to hire these many people, is when it comes to police and the emergency services and government positions. But that's not a limit. That's just saying, guys, we're going to hire 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And thus we have filled all of our jobs.
Yeah, that's right. And I suppose I see that as a bit different because they're employees.
True.
They're not, running their own business. Like a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or they're all kind of professions that I think of that they might be working as employees, but they're often working, in their own business or whatever, and I can't really think of anything.
No, I can't think of any. Most of us are just good old working class men.
Anyway, so the point that I was trying to make was that I don't think there ever will be another moratorium. It's also anti-competitive. So we know that this government in particular, and even probably the federal governments over the last 10 years, have kind of been anti-red tape, and they've been trying to remove as much kind of government input into people's lives or, government oversight or regulation of people's lives and businesses as possible. So many planes. There haven't been that many planes today except right now.
No, so what happened? I called into air traffic control and said, hey guys, we're about to click record.
Bring out the planes. More planes.
Send in the planes. That's what I just called them.
So they've been kind of like, decreasing regulation. And so I can't really see anybody putting more regulation in place in terms of this. It's anti-competitive. Let the market figure it out. The market will very quickly go, maybe you're just not that great a celebrant. Sorry, you might really want to be one, but maybe nobody wants you to do their wedding and maybe that's telling you something. Sorry, that was
big
harsh.
Big burns. Sarah's
that was harsh, I know.
Who were you thinking of just saying, name them?
No. But that's how markets work, right? They go, yeah, you're not any good at providing that service, so we're not going to pay you to do it anymore. So I think another part of the problem with celebrants is that there are a lot, we do know there are a small proportion of celebrants who are not actually working at all, but they're maintaining their registration for who knows what reason. I had someone in my OPD class in the first year who'd been registered for 5 years and he'd never done a wedding.
Wow.
So there is a small proportion of people who are staying registered and not working.
I wonder, are there people who like, it's a pipe dream, like I've gotten registered, I'm going to stay registered and like,
one day I'll do it.
Yeah, like there was even I coached someone recently, and they've got the medium to long term plan of going full time, but they're in a government job today, and so they're still operate they're marketing, but they're not like their full time goal is maybe a little bit of a longer stretch than mine and yours.
Yeah. Look, possibly, absolutely, but I think that when you look at some of these articles, they look at how many celebrants are currently registered, how many weddings are there in Australia that are carried out by civil celebrants every year. Oh, the average celebrant is only doing 10 weddings a year. It doesn't really work like that, though. You can't just put a number on it like that, because there's some who are not working, there's some who are working a lot. Yeah, that's not helpful either.
We should do a survey of celebrants and want members.
Well, that would also not be a representative sample.
It wouldn't be.
Because the people who are investing in their celebrant knowledge and understanding by joining Celebrant Institute are not your person who's not doing any weddings.
True.
You would think. I'm guessing here, but that would be my assumption. So, yeah. The article is – the other thing that I did want to say as well is that I've kind of been – ruminating in the back of my mind about Josh's thing about it's one thing to get from 0 kilometres an hour to 100 kilometres an hour, and it's another thing entirely to stay at 100 kilometres an hour. And I'm really interested in that as a notion. I've seen a lot of new celebrants who've come out of the gates and have absolutely nailed their first year, and I'm just not going to celebrate until they nail the next five.
Yeah. And particularly from a you and me point of view, like friendship point of view, like you want to be there supportive. Like I'm not 100% are, but I like having now gone that road, it's kind of like whenever I see people going on an American holiday, like I'm all for you, like go for it. I've been to America a lot. I know that if you just pay enough money to Qantas and rock up at Brisbane Airport at the right time with the right identification, that they'll let you onto the plane. and if you just sit there for 13 hours, then magically you're in the USA. And then you can make whatever you want of that experience given the amount of money and, you know, resources you allocate to things. Whereas I remember before I'd ever went to the USA, like, oh, you went to the USA? That's amazing. Tell me all the stories. And so having now gone to the USA, I just know that there's a procedure. You know, you just pay the $1,000 or $2,000 and you rock up and it's done. And so having now gone down that business journey, and each business journey is similar, but I did what I recommend other people to do, which is just to put your pedal to the metal. To get from 0 to 100, just put your pedal down hard enough, and you'll get to 100 kilometers eventually. Like even if you've got a really slow, shitty car, most cars can still get to 100 if you just leave the pedal to the metal enough. Like if you throw enough money at Google ads, Facebook ads, Instagram ads, get a good enough website, go throw some money at the website. If you know do enough expos, you do enough directories, and you pay for some features in some magazines, and next minute you spend $20,000, and which is pedal to the metal. And hopefully you've built enough social and brand capital so that people know what you're about, and you've blogged and you've Instagrammed and you've Facebooked and you've podcasted and you've videoed, and you do that for a year, you will book 100 weddings. That's like it's no grand feat. And hopefully, I know that many people have said to me, oh, my first year I've booked 20, 30, 40, 100, and they've been very proud, and I am proud of you. Like, it's good, because you've done the thing you're supposed to do.
Yeah, you put your pedal to the metal and off you went.
Yeah, so good on you. Like, it's don't be ashamed, don't feel embarrassed. But, and not that people have to impress me, so just don't live your life to impress me. But I will be impressed when you're still doing this a couple of years in.
When you can repeat that. For a few years.
Well, because don't repeat that.
Well, that's good point.
Terrible thing to repeat.
Be exhausted. But when you can repeat the outcome.
Yeah.
Maybe not the input, but when you can repeat those outcomes year after year, and you can have a sustainable business that's ongoing.
Yeah, because sitting at 100 Ks an hour without cruise control is actually a real skill. I borrowed my Brit's mum's husband's ute a little while ago. We had to go pick up some furniture from Brisbane. And for the first time in years, it was a manual without cruise control. And I'm sitting in his little ute on the M1 to Brisbane going I know what to do. Like I can drive manual and I could drive without cruise control and it's fine. But I'm like, all of my muscle memory is so off right now. I'm so far in the deep end because I've got to sit at 110 k's an hour on the motorway for like an hour. I hadn't done that in a while. Like my car, I've got a super lazy car. Like I get onto the motorway, I get up to 110 and I go boop, and it just sits at cruise control. And if the car in front of me slows down, my car slows down. When he speeds up, I speed up. It's super nerdy. So for me, in my car, to sit 110 on the motorway, really easy. But getting into his car to sit at 110, which is where the analogy comes from, that old manual slash no cruise control analogy, it's a real skill. Because truth be told, that whole journey, I don't even know if I did 110 for longer than 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's harder.
Yeah, like I was on 109 and 111.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
It's really hard. Yeah, you know, it's a little bit like going back to that analogy. Like if you leave Brisbane Airport, if you're flying to LA, many people think, well, you point your plane towards LA and you just fly. But no, it's a million slight adjustments. It's a little bit like, you know, left, right, like a million adjustments. Like if you stick your head out the window and look at the
don't stick your head out the window of the airplane.
If you put your head near the window and look outside. It is dangerous out there. You'll see the little airfoils and the little controls on the wing working all night long, because it's not just a set and forget. It's this constant hustle of.
And let's bring that back to what we're saying, which is that running a business is a constant hustle.
Yeah, yeah. And I completely understand everything that, like, we've had different friends that have, like, had a year off or had months off and whatnot, and I get that. But the skill and the art and the beauty, and even you'll see this yourself when you do this, it's actually a work of art to actually to do that in the long term, and it's beautiful. And I feel so proud looking back at what Brit and I have created, and even you and I with the Celebrant Institute work, we're coming up to a year in, and I'm like, I'm really proud of what we've built. Like, it's like we're definitely not rolling in money yet. Like, we yesterday we put $3-5 on the ground and rolled around just symbolically. It was weird, but we did it. But it's like, I'm proud of what we've done.
It's cool.
And I, you know, it's actually funny. Like, looking at the Celebrant Institute, we haven't done pedal to the metal. Like, we have with creational wise. And we did some promotion at the start, and so there's a bit of pedal to the metal, but
it's a different game though.
But we also made that decision.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you know, we didn't need, like, we already have full time businesses, and we actually I don't think you and I really had this conversation, and I don't have anything big to proclaim, but I don't know if I need the Celebrant Institute to be the biggest thing in my world.
No, not at all.
Like, I want it to be a thing, like an active thing. Like, yeah. I want, like, every week I would like to have time dedicated to it. And not because I want to give it time, but because it requires time of me.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that. I enjoy recording the podcast. I enjoy writing. I enjoy answering the questions. Even the questions, like, so many people ask questions that never make it to the website because we just call them. And that's, I like that. And even, maybe even by the time this podcast is out, maybe we've announced the big thing we're going to announce soon. Who knows? But there's a big thing we're announcing soon.
Woo!
And even in August this year, we were holding our first conference. And we were going to record a podcast about conference, weren't we? We'll do that at some point.
We could, like, talk about that now.
We could.
There was something that I wanted to say about. No. We may not have gone pedal to the metal in terms of throwing money at Google AdWords or anything like that. But I do kind of feel like our entire careers leading up to this were pedal to the metal in terms of building networks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
Building networks who would then come along on this journey with us.
Actually,
I can't believe I just said the word journey. But yeah, building real and authentic networks of people. Like, we worked hard to build those networks of people who then wanted to support us.
And the shitty audience we've got as well. These guys don't rock up for nothing. You have to ask them.
Oh, Josh. He really likes his sound effects board.
Is it a good time to kind of segue into talking about a conference?
Yeah, I think so.
We've talked about doing a whole episode about it, but maybe we'll just wrap up this episode because we're coming out towards the hour, which is fine. We've got our first conference this year. It's in August at Twin Towns on the Gold Coast. It's 2 to 4 days, which is, I know that might sound a bit weird, but we didn't want to just, like, we wanted everyone to have an opportunity to choose what they wanted to do. There's 2 main days of conference, and there's a day either side. One day beforehand is OPD, which Sarah here is leading with Coltrane, and that's a separate ticket. It's just a what you might call a regular old normal OPD session. But Celebrant Institute conference attenders get a discount, and all of that's on the celebrant.institute website. Look at the conference page there. And then there's a day after where there's a workshop with Vicky Munsey. I really have to ask her when she's on the podcast. We're going to record with her soon. And she's going to be talking about personality stuff. And I think that's just intrinsically beautifully and weird. I'd love to know more about that. I don't think I'll actually be able to attend the workshop because I've got to be in with Sundays that weekend. But so there's 2 to 4 days of conference. The 2 days of, like, regular conference. One day is actually us together with a room full of DJs as well. And we're going to be covering topics which are good for all of us. Sales, marketing. We're actually having someone in about talking about mental health and business, which is actually
really important. Yeah. Super important.
It kind of plays into everything we've been talking about already in this episode. There's some really smart people behind Big Mix and the DJAA, and I've been lucky to talk at their conference before. They're friends of mine as well, and so it's a good opportunity to share resources there, because it's hard to get people out of bed for many things, and so there's some people that are going to talk on the first day which is going to be helpful to everyone. Then on the second day of conference, we're going to split into different rooms. Celebrants one room for all day together, and DJs in another room, and they can do what they want to do. They'll talk about waka waka stuff, and and we're going to talk about celebrant stuff. And
what are we going to talk about, Josh?
Just celebrant stuff. Just
we are a bit more organized than that.
The day before, I'm going to Google celebrant stuff and see what people are talking about in regards to stuff for celebrants, and just whack it together. We're just a bit of a whack some shit together. No, that's not what's happening.
No,
it's not at all what's happening. So I'm going to be doing a session on digital paperwork, so signing on iPads and my filing system and all that kind of thing. Working with the Queensland BDM, New South Wales BDM, Victorian BDM, and how I do my legal paperwork fairly paperless.
Almost. And hopefully by then we might even have the fact sheet from the Attorney General's Department about working as a celebrant in an electronic transaction age, which would be
electric
great.
Electronic world.
Because we could add all that stuff in as well.
I'll just do the whole thing and like...
Don't. No. No.
You're going to do a session on that. You're going to... we're going to do a bit of a Q&A and like you're going to bring a bit of a legal refresher-ish kind of like here's the state of the union legal-wise, but also I know that people are going to have questions, and so just a bit of an open mic for that.
Yep.
We're going to be my friend Glenn McKay from GNN DJs is going to be doing a session on speaking, on talking, like emceeing. He's an amazing MC. He's an awarded and a renowned MC, wedding MC.
Because, of course, now that the conflict of interest guidelines have relaxed, we can offer our services both as MCs and as celebrants to the same couples.
Yeah, so I'm getting him to talk about MC receptions, but also that the public address part of being a celebrant, standing in front of a crowd. And so he's going to be talking about that. So on the first day of conference, I'm actually running a session at that conference about social media and I'm just going to bring some really fresh content ideas on social media. But then on the second day for celebrants only, my friend Scotty McDonald from Those Two Girls, which is the national radio show on all the Southern Cross Stereo radio stations. He's the he's one of the producers on that show. And he's going to be talking. He's actually, because he's a good friend of mine, he's actually brainstorming content ideas for celebrants. Because how many of us, even me, I think I'm pretty good at this. But sometimes I'll just open up Instagram like, I don't know what the fuck to post.
I have no idea. I'm terrible at it. I posted a photo of a chair on Friday, on Thursday, whatever day it was. It was a really freaking comfortable chair. And like, I had something to say about it and I got a lot of engagement, which was ridiculous. But I posted a picture of a chair. That's how bad it is. I have no idea what to post.
It's just hard sometimes to think about what do I post? And so Scotty's bringing ideas on that. And we've got a final session, which is currently on – oh, sorry, one more. We've got a local sound guy who runs a sound company, and he's actually going to be doing a easy-to-understand but technical talk on audio and ceremonies.
Brilliant.
So like speaker so positioning, good. Mic holding, that kind of gear.
Great. Useful.
He's going to be doing that. We've got a final session who I was trying to schedule a friend for and he hasn't been able to, he just hasn't replied. So maybe our friendship isn't valid. Who knows? I haven't chased him up. But I wanted to talk to a close friend who's an author, about, doing a story, story arc and a storytelling section. And so that part's still up for grabs. And so we're working on that at the moment and I'm talking to a few people about that. But, that's a quick wrap on the Celebrant Conference. I did just want to address, and because a part of me is like, you know what, I'm just going to put this out there and people can deal with it if they want. But I wanted to put it into the podcast because as far as conferences go, I think our conference, some people say it's expensive. Also, I look at conferences, it's actually not that expensive compared to so many conferences. Maybe Celebrant Conferences, like a lot of them go for $100, $200, $300, and that's cool. But this year's conference is being 100% financed and administrated and run by not us. So Sarah and I have actually got zero financial skin in the game. If no one turns up, we lose nothing. If everyone turns up, we gain nothing.
Yeah, we're not getting paid.
No, so we're not getting paid. We've actually purchased tickets ourselves because the conference is 100% administrated by the DJAA. who's the they are the DJ Association of Australia, and they run Beatmix Conference, which is the Beatmix, that's the DJ part of it. And so all the guys behind it, like close friends of mine, and we've partnered up because we wanted to run a conference, and they thought it might be a good idea to team up and share resources. And so they're doing it all. And so they're a not-for-profit association. So they actually don't make a profit off the conference. Like they'll never make a profit because it's just not, it's a not-for-profit organization. If the conference itself did become financially viable and was profitable, that money goes back into their association. But traditionally, their conference hasn't made a profit. Like it's come out into the black because Serge, who runs the joint, is anal retentive financially. He's an amazing guy. He's formerly an accountant, and I saw him speak on accounting.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Amazing.
I saw him speak on accounting at the DJAA conference maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Like smart guy, great head. But he runs the finances for it, and so he's done the math that if, because no one wants their companies running at a loss, and so he's like, well, if this number of people rock up, then it's financially viable. And they expect for less of those, and so they charge accordingly, so that it's not running in the red. And so, so it's funny. Like you can charge, you might charge less and less, and more people might turn up. And you know what? They might not as well. And so, Serge runs a conservatively good book on the conference. And you know what? If everyone turns up for this one, and maybe next year we do it with him again. We haven't got a commitment past this year. Maybe next year we do something a little bit different. I've got so many ideas. I've thought about, actually, I haven't even talked to you about this, but I thought imagine like a school camp, church camp kind of grounds, you know, we'll go and hang out there for a couple of days. I don't know. Get a cruise boat. There's
school
so many
camp
ideas.
Was like the worst time of my life. So, okay, so maybe not. Maybe school not. Camp. Maybe
we
not
go to some five-star resort in Bali.
Yes. Not Bali.
Not Bali. What
no,
Bali?
Bali Belly.
Oh, God.
Dangerous.
I'm there next week. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay. But that's the idea is that we we would hopefully create a conference that mattered, because as much as we're not making money, it's also got a name on it and it's got our reputations on it, and I'm planning for a conference that's really good.
Yep, for sure. I also think it's worth just saying that we're not trying to compete with any other conferences that exist. Like most associations run a conference of some description and, you know, we just like to share knowledge with people, and it's cool to get people in the same room and share a bunch of knowledge with them. We're not sort of trying to steal people from other conferences or anything like that.
Or are we?
I'm really keen to target those people who, you know, maybe have never been to a conference before, maybe don't belong to an association, you know, maybe wanted to try something different. Maybe they're at the point in their celebrant career where they're thinking about maybe investing a bit more in their celebrant stuff, and they, you know, want to come along and learn some more stuff and meet some more people. And yeah.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Sarah, this has been a really good chat. I hope that people have heard this and have decided to run a business that's good for them.
Yep, definitely.
That's definitely going to be the theme of all we're talking about through the conference in August. You know what? I might even sit down and think about going a little bit more, because I wanted to go very much on the ceremony performance aspect, because I feel like I talk about business too much, but maybe we should talk about business. I don't know. We'll think about this. We've got a few months. But this has been the Celebrant Talk Show. My name is Josh Withers.
I'm Sarah Aird. You can always contact us at hello@celebrant.fm. If you have anything at all that you would like us to talk about on the show, we're always happy to hear it.
And Celebrant.institute is the name of our membership program, where you can pay a monthly membership fee to be ask questions, read the articles. We write good stuff. Hopefully it's really helpful. That is the Jetstar flight to Sydney, which means we've got to go.
Thank you, everyone. We'll see you again next time.